Building a ladder. Governor Terry Branstad's new education plans envisioning Iowa schools climbing back to best in the nation. We're questioning those building the ladder. School Board's Executive Director, Tom Downs, and Teachers Union Director, Mary Jane Cobb, on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Iowa Bankers Association for personal, business, and commercial needs. Iowa banks help Iowans reach their financial goals. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you policymakers and decision makers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating 41 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television. This is the Friday, October 14 edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
When Iowa's General Assembly reconvenes next January, Iowa schools will be heading the agenda, not only for the usual funding decisions, but this time considering aggressively modifying systems for deciding who teaches and how students are learning. The initiative follows Governor Terry Branstad's Midsummer Education Summit, a wake-up call, if you will, to declining student achievement in Iowa's K-12 schools as compared to some other states. Something new for Iowans accustomed to usually smiling about the state leading in test scores. The proposed remedies are affecting legislators and, depending on what they decide, teachers, administrators, and school boards. Students, too. Mary Jane Cobb directs the Teachers Union, the Iowa State Education Association. Tom Downs, a retired school superintendent, now directs the Iowa Association of School Boards. Ms. Cobb, Mr. Downs, welcome to Iowa Press.
Thank you, Dean.
I look forward to a lively discussion because this is affecting a lot of us, as I've just said. And across the Iowa Press table, Associated Press senior political writer Mike Glover and Radio Iowa News director Kay Henderson.
Ms. Cobb, let's start with you. The fundamental underlying assumption that goes into Governor Branstad and many legislative leaders' approach to school reform, if you will, is that Iowa schools are declining or not keeping up with other schools around the country and around the world. Mm-hmm. Is that a good assumption?
The assumption is that we're declining, and I think we're not declining. We're not growing as fast as some other systems have been. I think if you look at the test scores, we have gone up in our scores. We've not gone up as quickly as some other states have. So we're not in decline as far as performance. We're in decline as far as how we rate against other systems.
Mr. Downs, so that means that reform is needed.
I think it's time for reform, and as Mary Jane said, the growth and the development of the global economy is such that other countries are growing quickly in their school improvement efforts, and we maybe have not grown as rapidly. And that's been the assault on Iowa schools, and I think what's the premise for the whole reform movement.
Ms. Cobb, people say it's going to take money. Will it?
Sure.
How
Absolutely.
Much?
I have no idea. And when we've asked that question, the answer we get is we need to look at what the right components of the plan are first, and then they'll give us a price tag of the plan. But it's going to cost money.
Where should that money go? To teachers? To facilities?
Well, I think we have facilities taken care of in some of the infrastructure monies that are available. I think when you look at the plan, the salary component that they talk about is going to cost money. There are testing components in here that will cost money. There are pieces related to how we mentor teachers and those kinds of things that are going to cost money. So there's going to be expense.
Mr. Downs, Jason Glass, the director of the Department of Education, has trotted out his education proposal. He has said it's going to cost money. Are you in line with that proposal? Does that do the right things? And how much do you think it'll cost?
Well, we're still educating our members on this proposal, and that's the position we're taking, not one of opposition or advocacy, one of education. I think it is going to cost money. My concern is it going to be reallocating the money we currently have, or in other words, realigning it
right.
from
mm-hmm.
programs to salaries? Or is it going to be new money? The cost of the ACT test for all juniors isn't inexpensive. I think the cost of training, if we're going to have teachers involved in evaluation and teachers coaching teachers,
right.
There's going to be intensive training required for that. That means time away from classrooms.
Which is money.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is money.
Has anybody given any thought to how much this might eventually cost?
I think the governor's clearly said that at this stage he's gaining feedback on the reform. He wants to know what people can favor, what they challenge, and what suggestions. And he's readily admitted if We can find initiatives that are going to be supported by Iowans, we'll find the money.
You two represent organizations, teachers, administrators, who've been involved in discussions about past reform efforts. I think before we get to talking about details like those ACT tests for high schoolers, I'm just wondering if change will actually occur. In your opinion, will change actually occur from the perspective of teachers?
That's the question that teachers ask us when we have this conversation. I think that's the question they're asking themselves. We're sort of in an industry that is exploding with good ideas, bad ideas, neutral ideas right now. And teachers are a little skeptical about where it's coming from and what it's going to look like and if it's actually going to make it into the classroom. And so I think the consensus building process that the governor's office is trying to engage in now is helping people understand that they're moving on an initiative.
On the part of administrators, is there some building momentum for actual reform, or is the status quo going to win again?
No, as I represent school boards, what administrators are asking me is, how can you help boards embrace the need for change? How can we help boards understand that these reforms are timely and will benefit schools? But change is a process that people go through. And I'm encouraged that the governor recognizes this is a 5 to 10 year initiative. Right. It may take 5 years before we see any results of these changes. I've learned one thing in Iowa education, that it's not a push or shove, it's a lead, and it's an educate.
You mentioned that you represent school boards. You don't consider them part of the administration of the school?
Clearly, they're the executive branch of the school administration, but as Dean said at the start, I still see life pretty much through the eyes of a superintendent having retired in June. I remind myself I'm now serving boards. I think boards of education want change. They want better classroom teachers. They want higher achievement. They want more technology. They want their kids prepared to compete in a global economy.
Is there the patience amongst the electorate to wait for this 5 to 10 years before something happens, before they see the result? The electorate is notoriously short-sighted.
And right now, the electorate is clearly tied with the financial challenges that Iowa schools are facing.
Right.
We've been underfunded. There's no shortage of people who are critical of this plan because they feel the money isn't there currently to meet the needs. And I think boards are going to have to revisit their priorities. Is it going to be to support a new salary structure system? Is it going to be supporting teacher development
right.
and shared decision-making on hiring and on evaluation? Lots of challenges.
Ms. Cobb, what role do teachers play in, making this play out, helping sell this program to an electorate that is not that all that patient and may not be willing to wait for 5 years for something
right.
to happen?
I actually think that the decision to maintain the course with the Iowa core, you know, there was some discussion in the last legislative session
right.
to move away from the core and go to a different set of
now
standards.
Now, that's the core curriculum.
The Iowa core curriculum,
yes.
Right. I think that the decision to stay that course was an indication that we have some patience, that's going to be a real test for us to see if we're willing to take a long-term initiative and implement it.
This is not a question to lay the blame for the
sure.
past. It's a question of if you're going to make some changes, you have to know why change proposals in the past haven't worked.
Mm-hmm.
So why haven't they worked? Who's to blame for Iowa schools, as you've made the distinction, falling behind, maybe mm-hmm. not declining as such, mm-hmm. but falling behind other states? And, you know, is it lack of funding? Mr. Downs has mentioned it's going to take money, and mm-hmm. there has been underfunding in the past.
Right.
Is it underfunding? Is it the teachers' union? Because teachers' union has been blamed for wanting status quo and not making changes in the past. Is it local control, local school boards mm-hmm. wanting, we control the standards here? Why in the past have these proposed changes failed to make a difference?
I would say that one of the reasons they failed to make a difference in the past is we've not given them a chance to be implemented. We are notorious in education for a flavor of the month. This is the initiative we're going to do today, and then we try it for a little bit, and then we move on to the next. When teachers want real reform of a lasting nature, and that's where I think they're looking at the Iowa core, something that they can hang their hat on for more than just a week. Certainly funding is a part of the issue,
And I hope you hear me saying that teachers aren't defending the status quo in this one. Teachers want to improve. Nobody wants schools to be better more than teachers do. But they need the support and the structures. Teachers need more time for collaboration. Teachers have to go in their classroom, work with their students, have very little time to interact with each other, to reflect on their practices, to go in and observe a different teacher, to see a different methodology. We need to be able to move teachers out of their classroom, across the schools, into other buildings if necessary, to learn, to practice, and reflect with each other to improve the way that they are working with students.
Mr. Downs, you've been around for a long time as a superintendent, now representing school boards. Why have things failed in the past?
I think, as Mary Jane said, it's a combination of challenges we've had. I'll go back to funding continues to not give these initiatives a long-range life. I go back now to thinking that the federal government's looking at reauthorizing the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. And
No Child Left Behind.
Well, it's going to be a little modification of No Child Left Behind. And
yes,
those of us who've been critical of No Child Left Behind because of the punitive measures recognize, and I think we'd agree, that there's a new conversation, a richer conversation between teachers and teachers and teachers and administrators and board members and administrators about student achievement, mm-hmm, and about shrinking that achievement gap between kids regardless of what their demographic issues are. I have confidence that this reform plan has already engaged educators in conversations about what we can do to improve. And that really is one of the benefits of...
You're more optimistic about this one succeeding then?
I'm very optimistic about this succeeding. I think it's going to take time and some investment of resources, but I believe this provides teachers, administrators, board members a united front to talk about how can we improve schools.
Ms. Cobb, there's a lot of talk, and Mr. Downs just mentioned it, No Child Left Behind. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of criticism of No Child Left Behind. What's wrong with that law?
It's too punitive. It sets goals that sometimes are unattainable for schools and has a punitive sort of reaction instead of a support. When we identify our lowest achieving schools, what mm-hmm. we need to do is go in and provide the teachers in those schools the kind of professional development they need to improve their practices, to work with the student populations that they have. We need more supports and less sort of naming and blaming. And so I'm hoping that as Senator Harkin and his committee work through the reauthorization, they look at that. And from every indication I've seen so far, they are.
Mr. Downs, same question to you. What's wrong with No Child Left Behind?
I believe that the punitive measures...
And these punitive measures are if students don't meet certain requirements on test scores... Right.
By 2014, school staff are replaced, school leadership's replaced, and in essence, the state or the federal government could take over the operation of the school. That hasn't happened in Iowa. We are kind of amused by what would happen nationally if the Fed or government tried to take over all the schools. We know it couldn't happen. It's a local decision. We've talked about local control. But what I think's good about No Child Left Behind is it's raised the conversation about what we can do to reduce the achievement gap between those kids who have plenty and those kids who don't, those kids who have disabilities and those who don't. It's engaged us in new conversations about student achievement, about how we assess and test students.
Speaking
and
of
the governor and Jason Glass at the Education Department have trotted out their education reform proposal. Are you supportive of that? Do you think that's headed in the right direction?
I think the whole reform movement, as I said a moment ago, is cause for all of us to be supportive, hopeful, and encouraged. The devil's in the details, as we all heard.
Of course.
I think as I've watched the governor and Jason go out to the state and begin these town hall meetings, one thing that isn't in the report, but it seems to be a question asked at the end of all the town hall meetings is, should we lengthen the school year? Well, this plan is going to require a lengthening of the school year for teacher training, for administrative and teacher partnerships, and I'm certainly believing it'll enrich the conversations that happen at school board meetings.
Ms. Cobb, does it mean a longer school year?
The salary component does increase the number of days that teachers work. It doesn't increase the school year for students.
So there should be a longer school year. In your view?
I didn't say that. I actually think that we should consider longer school years for some of our student populations. To say that we have a set number of school days and that's right for every child is probably not the best way to approach this. We have some students who need that extra support. over the summer and different structures. A lot of school districts are trying different kinds of calendars too, spreading the 180 days differently so that we don't have the loss of learning over the summer like a lot of students
experience. Kay, you've been trying to get a question in here.
The Branstad administration has suggested testing third graders to see if they're reading at grade level. If they don't pass that test, they're not socially promoted to go on to fourth grade. They have to repeat third grade. Is that a good idea to keep students from advancing if they haven't mastered the craft of reading?
I think we're both going to jump in shoulder to shoulder on this one. As educators, we know the research on retaining students shows little support for the benefits of the student. Retention has not worked. Retention does not prove to be in the student's best interest. However, the reading plan that we look at here intensifies supports for reading, prioritizes reading at primary levels to be job one, and it needs to be. Students need to be reading by third grade. Mm-hmm. But the idea of retaining them and then moving them to fourth grade at a time that they suddenly are proficient creates lots of demographic issues and logistical mm-hmm. problems.
Well, the Branstad administration specifically cites Florida, which is mm-hmm. doing this, and they cite success there.
Right.
And they actually say the Spanish-speaking students are reading better than all Iowa students at third grade as a result.
Mm-hmm. I've heard those same reports. What I hear is from fourth grade teachers who have a real significant concern about the fact that a third grade student, when they're deemed proficient after they've been held back, would be introduced into a fourth grade classroom at any point in the year. That student's going to have missed everything that's happened up until that point. How do we reintegrate them? What do we do if we have a student that's great with numeracy? They're very good with numbers, their math grades are good, and they have problems with reading. Are we holding them back in math and moving them forward? I think that the focus on reading is good. I am not convinced the retention is right. I know what the Florida numbers say, but I want to talk to some more teachers in Florida and see what they say.
Well, I want to talk about testing, ACT testing for high schoolers next, but before we go there, you've raised an interesting issue. Critics of the current model for education say students should move through the system at their own pace. And
sure.
this idea of parking them in third grade for 9 months mm-hmm. is ridiculous.
Right.
As part of this reform movement, will there be a movement to let students move at their own pace and get rid of this idea that you have first grade, second grade, sure. third grade, fourth grade?
The innovation part of the plan deals with a movement away from the Carnegie unit, which is the number of hours mm-hmm. that a student's in a class. And I think they're approaching it through some school districts piloting it initially, and then looking at ways that the system supports students moving through the system at their own pace.
Would Iowa schools easily be able to do this in every kind of sized school, from small school to middle to large school?
I think Iowa schools already are doing that, Kay. I think they are moving kids along as their skills indicate and as parent and education leaders determine what's best for the student. Whether it's wholesale or that we blur the lines between grades, I don't see that kind of reform happening. But
one of the things that's involved in the governor's recommendation is some kind of a way of evaluating teachers, linking teacher pay to performance in the classroom. There's been a lot of criticism of that because it's usually linked to student tests.
Yeah.
The governor's program does not link teacher pay to student test performance, but puts a bunch of other evaluating questions in it. What's the best way of evaluating how teachers are doing, Mr. Downs?
I think the best way to evaluate how teachers are doing is working with that teacher in a formative way, being in the classroom, giving them feedback constantly, allowing them opportunities to visit other classrooms, promoting district-wide professional development. I think it's clear the governor and Jason do not believe in this being a pay for test scores. I think the pay components or the salary components of this plan are more in line to raise the profession, to
right.
attract quality college students to choose education, and to maintain the teachers who already are in the profession and doing very well to stay in the classroom rather than leaving the classroom for other fields or choosing administration.
Let me ask Ms. Cobb, where would you like to change Governor Branstad's plan as it relates to teachers, and following on Mike's question, where would you like to change it?
The concept of teacher leader roles is an amazing one. It's one that we've got to consider. When you look at the plan, there are percentages of teachers at each level. we don't need to cap how many master teachers a district has. Local districts need to be able to decide what they need in terms of master teachers and mentor teachers. We need to have more flexibility for local districts and their local associations to negotiate what's best in their circumstances.
But are you in line with the governor's proposal that teachers ought to be evaluated on a number of fronts other than just the performance of their students on test scores?
Currently, the plan doesn't address a change in the evaluation as much as it changes the way we evaluate schools. If you're asking me if I think student standardized test scores should be part of a teacher's evaluation, my answer to that is I think we already have an over-reliance on standardized tests in this country.
So what should they be evaluated on?
They should be evaluated on the observation of their classes. What teachers tell us constantly is they want the feedback. They want someone to come in, do an observation, give them support, give them feedback on how to improve their practice. That's where the evaluation comes in.
Mr. Cobbs, you earlier mentioned the cost of administering the ACT test to every high schooler to gauge their proficiency in the various courses. Is that the wrong approach?
I don't favor that approach.
Why?
I believe that many of our students are choosing career and vocations. We know the ACT and the SAT are designed to be college readiness exams. I think the cost is going to far outweigh the value of having all Iowa students do it. And my fear is that the reason we want all juniors to do it is it's another measure to compare us to other states, other kids, other countries. And testing for the purpose of just measuring how we look against Massachusetts or Wisconsin or Sweden or Finland isn't, to me, a good investment.
You're getting a nod here from Ms. Cobb.
I agree completely. We need to look at why we test students. If we're only assessing our students so that we can benchmark them against students in other states and other countries, it's the wrong reason. We need to be assessing students so that teachers can change their practice, find out what they're learning, what they're not learning, and help them learn.
Kay, go ahead.
The Iowa Board of Educational Examiners has tabled a controversial proposal which would let non-licensed professionals go into the classroom and teach in particular subject areas like math and science. Mr. Cobb, do you think that's a good idea?
Alternative pathways for finding teachers or finding administrators or finding superintendents is really a reform for Iowa schools. I do believe with some careful analysis of their skill sets, of their life experiences, it's more than content mastery that makes a teacher effective. It's that whole affective side. It's the relationships. It's the skill set to communicate with young people. I do believe there are professionals in the trades and in the other professions that would make excellent teachers, but there has to be a clear screening process. And if we call that an alternative pathway than a four-year degree at a regent school, fine.
Ms. Cobb, let's look at practical side of things. Mm-hmm. Coming in January, all of these issues are going to have to work their way through the legislature. Tell me what role your organization is going to play in advancing this agenda through the legislature, because both the governor, legislative leaders of both parties say they want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. How are you going to help move it through the legislature?
Well, in all honesty, I can't tell you today that we're going to help move it through the legislature because we've not taken a position in support of or in opposition to. We're doing our homework right now. We will certainly provide the teacher voice in that conversation, having our members be in constant contact with their legislators about what the teacher voice in this is.
Well, what concerns do you have with it?
What concerns do I have with it? I have a lot of concerns in what I don't know about it. You know, there are pieces in here that sound really good in a one-line statement, but I need to know where the funding comes from, what the changes to statute are. It really matters about the details of this.
Course. Mr. Downs, same question to you. What role do you think your organization is going to play in advancing this through the legislature, and have you decided to try to advance it?
Well, we're going to advance educating board members throughout the state about the details and logistics, but as Mary Jane has shared, we still haven't seen the costs. And boards are very concerned about unfunded mandates. Boards are very concerned about living within their revenue stream, very concerned about local property taxes. And we know that corporate and commercial and residential property taxes are issues the governor also has interest in. How that all plays in unity as we work on improving schools.
Can you back what they're talking about reducing commercial and industrial property taxes? That's going to have a huge impact on
local schools. We have lots of concerns about that. locally.
Ms. Cobb, same question.
Same concerns. We have a lot of concerns about that. And I will tell you, there are other pieces in the blueprint we have some pretty specific concerns about that I don't think would surprise people in some of the parts of this that diminish teachers' rights. And make teachers at-will employees for much longer, change the appeals process and termination. Some of those things, you know, I don't believe that we have to diminish teachers' rights to improve student learning, and we're going to have a good conversation about that.
Mike, you raised a point I'm not sure our viewers understood, and the concern about property taxes.
The governor has proposed some reductions in commercial industrial mm-hmm. property taxes. Commercial industrial property taxes obviously help support schools, so that could be a problem, Mr. Downs, for both of you.
Well, I think it will be. I mean, if it takes local revenue away or changes the assessed valuation of a district, it obviously is going to sway the local impact on property taxpayers. And board members are constantly analyzed by their constituents about mm-hmm. the value and the burden put on them by local taxes.
Ms. Cobb, will you be fighting that?
Yes. If anything that we do to take revenue out of the funding stream for schools either has to be replaced in another way or we have to cut
programs.
Because
what you're talking about is more revenue, not less.
You mean in this program? This yes. program is definitely talking about more revenue,
and can
not
either
less.
Of you give me a ballpark on what you think this might cost?
I think we're in the hundreds of millions.
Mr. Downs?
I have no idea. I've heard hundreds of millions, but...
But you, you wouldn't disagree with her hundreds of millions of dollars?
Not at all. My question, and what I still have yet to have answered, how much are we going to require districts to just reassign or redistribute existing state funds? I mean, we know that education is a huge part of the Iowa budget.
58%.
And you take that percent, I don't see a lot more money coming to education, so we're going to have to look internally. What are we going to do without to implement this? And that's the devil in the details.
Let's talk about the student experience. There are many who say the student experience in the small school is not that of a student in a larger school because they don't have access to the kinds of courses that their colleagues in larger schools have. This really doesn't address the size issue, which legislators are never willing to touch. But is that one of the flaws of this plan, that it doesn't address the quality of the teaching at all levels and the size of schools, Mr. Downs?
I'm not certain that the failure to address consolidation or reorganization of Iowa's small, medium, and large schools is an issue here that we need to concern ourselves with. It certainly will be an issue in front of the state in the near future. We know that there are quality graduates coming from all Iowa schools. I mean, we can look at some of our top students coming from small schools.
Right.
With the use of technology, with effective teaching, with supports for kids, we're finding that regardless of the size of the district, they're improving. It's the cost to the state of those small schools that's, I think, going to be a real concern.
Can Iowa afford as many school districts as it has currently?
Well, the students have to go to school somewhere. And we're going to have to educate our students in our rural communities in a school in some mechanism. So that cost is not going to change.
I don't believe Iowa can continue to afford the number of schools we currently have.
And that's almost heresy for you, isn't it?
I know.
Well, if you think about it, it's heresy in that we've got to think about transforming, reorganizing, and looking better at how we can share and collaborate. We have to remember that the word community is in the name of most of our local schools. And community is not just our local town, our local city.
I have to interrupt. I'm sorry that we're out of time. We've moved on, and I wish we could.
We'll do a whole nother show on that topic.
Thanks so much for being with us. As we close, a reminder that the internet is your direct link to our Iowa Press staff. The email address is at the bottom of the screen right now. We'll be back next weekend, usual time, 7:30 Friday night, 11:30 Sunday morning. I'm Dean Borg, and thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Iowa Bankers Association for personal, business, and commercial needs. Iowa banks help Iowans reach their financial goals.